Speaker came down hand over hand, landed on his feet, and moved a few steps away, cat careful, balanced like a dancer. Nessus came down, gripping the rope with alternate sets of teeth. He landed in tripod position. If either of them noticed that Teela was upset, they gave no sign. They stood below the tilted hull of the lyre, looking about them. They were in an enormous, shallow gully. Its floor was translucent gray and perfectly flat and smooth, like a vast glass tabletop. Its borders, 100 yards from the ship in either direction, were gentle slopes of black lava. The lava seemed to ripple and flow before Louis's eyes. It must still be hot, he decided, from the impact of the lyre's landing. The shallow lava walls stretched away behind the ship, away and away, perfectly straight, until they dwindled to a vanishing point. Louis tried to stand up. Of the four of them, he was the only one having trouble with his balance. He reached his feet, then stood precariously balanced, unable to move. Speaker to Animals unsheathed his flashlight laser and fired at a point near his feet. They watched the point of green light, in silence. There was no crackle of solid material exploding into vapor. No steam or smoke formed where the beam struck. When Speaker released the trigger button, the light was gone instantly. The spot was not glowing, nor was it marked in any way. Speaker delivered the verdict. "We are in a furrow plowed by our own landing. The ring foundation material must have ultimately stopped our fall. Nessus, what can you tell us about it?"
"This is something new," the puppeteer answered. "It seems to retain no heat. Yet it is not a variant on the general product's hull, nor on the slaver stasis field."
"We'll need protection to climb the walls," said Louis. He wasn't particularly interested in the ring foundation material, not then. "You'd better stay here, all of you, while I climb up." After all, he was the only one wearing a heat-insulated pressure suit.
"I'll come along," said Teela.
Moving without effort, she came up under his arm. He leaned heavily on her, stumbling but not falling, as they moved toward the black lava slope. The lava was good footing, though steep. "Thanks," he said, and he started up. A moment later, he realized that Teela was following him. He said nothing. The faster she learned to look before she leapt, the longer she'd live. They were 12 yards up the slope when Teela yelled and began dancing. Kicking high, she turned and pelted down slope. She slid like an ice skater when she hit the ring floor. Sliding, gliding, she turned with her hands on her hips and glared upward, baffled and injured and angry. It could have been worse, Louis told himself. She could have slipped and fallen and burned her bare hands, and he'd still have been right. He continued to climb, repressing ugly pangs of guilt. The bank of lava was approximately 40 feet high. At the top, it gave way to clean white sand. They had landed in a desert. Searching the near distance with his eyes, Louis could find no sign of vegetation green or water blue. That was a piece of luck. The lyre could as easily have plowed through a city. Or through several cities. The lyre had plowed quite a furrow. It stretched long miles across the white sand. In the distance, beyond where that gouge ended, another began. The ship had bounced, not once but many times. The gouge of the lyre's landing went on and on, narrowing to no more than a dotted line, a trace. Louis let his eyes follow that trace, and he found himself looking into infinity. The ring world had no horizon. There was no line where the land curved away from the sky. Rather, earth and sky seemed to merge in a region where details the size of continents would have been mere points, where all colors blended gradually into the blue of sky. The vanishing point held his eyes fixed. When he blinked, as he finally did, it was with deliberate effort. Like the void mist of Mount Lookatthat, seen decades ago and light centuries away, like the undistorted deeps of space as seen by a belt miner in a single ship, the ringworld's horizon could grip the eye and the mind of a man before he was aware of the danger. Louis turned to face into the gully. He shouted, "The world is flat!" They looked up at him. "We ripped quite a line coming down. I can't see that there's anything living around here, so we were lucky. Where we hit, the earth splashed. I can see a scattering of small craters, secondary meteorites back along the way we came. He turned. In the other direction, and he stopped. Louis? That's the biggest Tange Mountain I ever saw in my life. Louis! He had spoken too softly. A mountain, he bellowed. Wait till you see it. The Ringworld engineers must have wanted to put one big mountain in the world, one mountain too big to use, too big to grow coffee on or trees, too big even for skiing. It's magnificent. It was magnificent. One mountain, roughly conical, all alone, forming no part of a chain. It had the look of a volcano, a mock volcano, for beneath the Ringworld there was no magma to form volcanoes. Its base was lost in mist. Its higher slopes showed clear through what must be thinning air, and its peak had a shiny look of snow. Dirty snow, not bright enough to be clean snow. Perhaps permafrost. There was a crystal clarity to the edges of the peak. Could it thrust clear out of the atmosphere? A real mountain that size would collapse of its own weight, but this mountain would be a mere shell of ring foundation material. I'm going to like the Ringworld engineers, said Louis Wu to himself. On a world built to ordered specification, there was no logical reason for such a mountain to exist. Yet every world should have at least one unclimbable mountain. Beneath the curve of the hull, they waited for him. Their questions boiled down to one. Did you see any sign of civilization? No. They made him describe everything he'd seen. They established directions. Spinward was back along the meteoric furrow dug by the Liar's Landing. Anti-spinward was the opposite direction toward the mountain. Port and starboard were to the left and right of a man facing spinward. Could you see any of the rim walls to port or starboard? No, I don't understand why they should have been there.
Unfortunate, said Nessus.
Impossible. You can see for thousands of miles up there.
Not impossible, unfortunate.
Again,
could you see nothing beyond the desert?
No. A long way to port I saw a trace of blue. Might have been ocean, might have been just distance.
No buildings?
Nothing.
Contrails in the sky? Straight lines that might have been freeways?
Nothing.
Did you see any sign of civilization?
If I had, I'd tell you. For all I know, the whole 10 trillion of them moved to a real Dyson sphere last month.
Louis, we must find civilization.
I know that. It was too obvious. They had to get off the Ringworld, and they weren't going to move the Liar by themselves. True barbarians would not be help enough, no matter how numerous or how friendly. There is one bright aspect to all this, said Louis Wu. We don't have to repair the ship. If we can just get the Liar off the ring's rotation will fling it and us out of the star's gravity well, out to where we can use the hyperdrive.
But first we must find help.
Or force help, said Speaker.
But why do you all just stand here talking? Teela burst out.
She had been waiting silent in the circle, letting the others thrash it out.
We've got to get out of here, don't we? Why not get the fly cycles out of the ship? Let's get moving, then talk. I am reluctant to leave the ship, the puppeteer stated.
Reluctant? Are you expecting help? Is anyone the least bit interested in us? Did anyone answer our radio calls? Louis says we're in the middle of a desert. How long are we going to sit here?
She could not realize that Nessus had to work up his courage, and, thought Louis, she had no patience at all.
Of course we will leave, said the puppeteer. I merely stated my reluctance, but we must decide where we will go, else we will not know what to take and what to leave behind.
We head for the nearest rim wall.
She's right, said Louis. If there's civilization anywhere, it'll be at the rim wall. But we don't know where it is. I should have been able to see it from up there.
No, said the puppeteer.
You weren't there, Tangit. You could see forever up there, thousands of miles without a break. Wait a minute.
The Ringworld is nearly 1 million UN miles across.
I was just about to realize that, said Louis Wu. Scale,
It keeps fouling me up. I just can't visualize anything this big.